SMS us now on 31702.
All right, we've got a caller on the line, and we will be chatting, or not a caller rather, we've got our next interview with Chantal Blokdek. As I've mentioned, we're looking at a very important discussion with 16 days of activism, and our focus today is the link between pornography and gender-based violence. Chantal Blokdek, who's the program coordinator of Parent Talk, is with us, and we are talking about the unspoken epidemic of children and pornography at the center against sexual exploitation. Chantal, not an easy discussion. Good morning and welcome.
Morning. Thank you. Yes, it's not.
Where do we begin exactly with regards to the link between pornography, how it's harmful between for women, children, and men?
I think we start by talking about it, you know, by having this conversation. And so we are so grateful at the Center Against Sexual Exploitation South Africa for radio stations like yourself that are willing to talk about it. Really getting down to grassroots organizations, civil society, opening up this can of worms. I think that is really key.
Mm. And then can you give us a bit of a background with the research that you've found? We always need to make sure that we've got evidence-based research and we don't lean towards assumption, because you may find that there is a market which is healthy, but there is also the darker side of pornography that we need to talk about. Parents should be aware as well.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the average age of exposure to any given child at the moment is between 8 and 10 years old. It's often accidental. And children don't have the context we have as adults. So they are often traumatized to see the kind of content that they see. Let's not get this wrong for a moment, that at the Center Against Sexual Exploitation, we thoroughly and believe with all conviction that pornography is a public health crisis, which means that it's not healthy for any human being to consume. We regard it as a digital drug, and we regard it as digital harm to society. And we have loads of stats and research. You can look up case.co.za. You can read up the research there. You can also look at nicosa.org. You can look at fightthenewdrug.org. There are so many wonderful resources out there. We could sit here for days with all the research coming out.
So I've also been exposed to some work, and it's not the easiest of work. And one of those organizations is called SWET, where you find sex workers who are single mothers and they are trying to earn a living. And also what you find is that they become victims of violence because of the stigma attached towards it. How do you measure their plight and also their democratic right to be a sex worker versus the discussion that we are having today?
Well, I think, you know, for me, my area of expertise is child protection, but it really is human protection, specifically around pornography. So what I can tell you this morning is that right now, as we're chatting, 88% of pornography, internet pornography, is depicting violence against women, either verbally or physically. So I just want to really pull the link together this morning around, you know, connect the dots between pornography and gender-based violence.
All right.
Because it's really happening across the board. And unfortunately, there's so many different sectors, you know. In reality, pornography is deeply and increasingly implicated in virtually all forms of sexual violence. We cannot speak about rape or abuse, you know, commercial sexual exploitation or domestic violence without understanding pornography as a driving force behind all of this.
You mentioned accidental exposure. How do you control access to pornography when children, like, for example, if a parent, in an ideal world, according to the sentiment and the stats that we're getting for you, we wouldn't have pornography so freely accessible, but it does happen accidentally. How do you control access to pornography with children?
Yes, so let me just say that there are groups at the moment who are pushing for child neglect in terms of giving a child a device that connects to the internet without filters and blockers and protectors on that device. So if you're a parent out there, if you give a child a device, you have to make sure that it has protection on it. And we're moving into a digital age where it will become criminal not to give your child, I mean, not to put protection on a device that you give to a child. So that is your number one step, is that you're going to be putting internet filters and blockers on devices. The internet is not a free-for-all. You know, I heard someone say, if giving your child a device with no internet filters is like, you know, driving them to a dark alley, dropping them off and driving away. I was like, whoa, that's quite extreme. But when I look at the research, I'm like, yo, come on, let's get real about it. There's some very seriously evil things on the internet.
Yeah, you just, even the pop-ups, they get very pervasive. And I think one solution is YouTube Kids. A lot of parents have taken their kids off normal YouTube and are utilizing YouTube Kids.
Yes, yes.
And then
yes.
Yes, please go on.
Sorry. So that there are so many variables. That's why I didn't go into it right now. But I find that if you, the filters and the blockers, they filter over every platform. So whether it is YouTube or gaming or emailing or whatever, you know, that's our number one recommendation. And to find one also that is not just a blocker, but also a filter that you can sort of train your child to be responsible on the internet. So to be a responsible digital citizen is also now part of being a parent.
Okay.
Yes, to help our kids to understand how to live responsibly online and offline.
If you've just joined us, we're talking about, for our 16 days of activism against women and child abuse, we're talking about the link between pornography and GBV. We're joined by Chantel Blockdick, the program coordinator of Parent Talk. So how important is sexual education, and at what age should it start?
Good question. You're rolling them out, eh? At 18 minutes past five this morning. I think that, you know, it's so important to talk to children. As for me personally, as soon as they can talk, you're talking to them about their value, about body hygiene, about respecting other people. I mean, we get heart attacks now when parents come to us and say, you know, my child's 14 or 12 and I've never spoken to them because they've never asked any questions. And we're saying, you know, this is part of our campaigning at the center, to say to parents, no, we can't, it's not the 80s anymore. We can't wait for them to come and ask questions. We are living in an information age. We have to educate them around the issues that are going to protect them. We cannot wait for them to come and talk to us about it. We have to be, you know, we have to be there before Google. Because if we're not there before Google initially, they're just going to go and Google, and you don't want that. You want them to come and ask you any question that they have, and you want to be able to stay calm, ask a question back, make sure that you know what they are asking. Sometimes they're just asking something simple, and you can ramble off, you know, and say things that are maybe over their heads. So, you know, from a young age, we're talking about a lot of things, and it's really a lot of conversations over the years, you know, obviously getting more detailed as the older that children get. But we really recommend a lot of chats with children around sexuality and sexual health today.
How do you deal with children that have become hypersexualized? We know that it's a technique used by for grooming children in the perverse world of pedophiles. But how do you deal with children who become hypersexualized due to socioeconomic circumstances or the influences of older children?
Yes, that's a tough one. You know, friends of mine are busy trying to open the first safe house in South Africa that is specifically around, that is specifically for children who have been sexually abused. So it's a very, very, very tough subject. I mean, at the moment, most children that are sexually abused are just thrown into the system with all the other children, which is obviously a very big issue, because children will always be victims. You know, children are always victims. When it comes to the internet, they are always victims. They were born into this world. It is a very sexualized world, unfortunately, because there's some selfish people that just want to make money, and they're not taking into consideration innocent, you know, mm-hmm. human beings that are walking around. So it's a very difficult one, but they need to see counselors, obviously, you know. Yeah. They need to work it out. They need to be in a community that loves them and that supports them, understands that they are not bad, but whatever they've been exposed to was bad. There's so much to be said on that one, and it's a great topic to talk about.
Yep.
But I'm not, I don't think I can be very specific right now. I don't know how PG I can get.
No, we have to approach this, and we have a responsibility to inform our listeners, obviously, without being explicit. And there's one caller here who would like to challenge our current discussion. He says, rubbish. Nobody's forced to watch porn. If you don't like porn, then don't watch it. Leave adults to make their own choices. Grow up. What's your response to that?
Wow.
Yeah, that's the kind of messages we get. Yeah.
Yes. My response is, it is scientific. Your brain has something called dopamine in it. You have something called a feeling center in your brain, right? And that is responding. That was created to respond to another human being. What we're doing right now is we are pushing that in a digital direction, which means that people are now seeing body parts as a commodity. Pornography is no longer just entertainment. I must say, I was listening to the UN, the United Nations. I'm not sure if this viewer is aware of the United Nations, but I was listening to the United Nations this week, and they were having high-level meetings about trafficking in person. And pornography came up time and time and time again as a public health crisis, because what pornography is doing is it's sexualizing people to the point that they must walk out their door and go and buy sex, all right? And they're walking out their door and they're abusing another person, or they're walking out their door. And this rolls around now as understanding pornography as a driving force behind the normalization and legitimization of violence against women and children. And so if you are consuming certain content that is showing you violence against women and children, over time, you will think that that is okay. And as I said, now, it's scientific. You can look it up. It's all about the brain. It's called mirror neurons that you have in the brain that changes the way you think. See, the biggest danger with pornography right now is that it's changing the way people think.
Right.
And people want to, like I said yesterday to someone, people want to blame alcohol for gender-based violence. But all alcohol is doing is lowering down those inhibitions and showing you what that person really thinks.
All right. Thank you so much. That is our feature for the 16 Days of Activism Against Women. We've just been in discussion with Chantal Blockdeck, the program coordinator of Parent Talk. You can email them at parents@case-sa.org.